but he conceded that, by his estimate, nearly 6% of the population was defective and 2% was irretrievably degenerate and in need of segregation. These estimates didn't even include blacks and other inferior races whom he considered irredeemable, save perhaps through intermarriage with Aryans. Black inferiority was the main reason this champion of the labor movement felt slavery was justified. Commons and colleagues at Wisconsin laid the foundation for most of the labor reforms we have today, many of them wholly defensible and worthwhile. Others, such as the Davis-Bacon Act, reflect the racial animus of the progressives. The act was passed in 1931 in order to prevent poor black laborers from taking jobs from whites. Its authors were honest about it, and it was passed explicitly for that reason. The comparatively narrow issue of cheap black labor was set against the backdrop of the vestigial progressive effort to maintain white supremacy. By requiring that contractors on federal projects pay prevailing wages and use union labor, the act would lock black workers out of federal jobs projects. Today, the Davis-Bacon Act is as sacred to many labor movement liberals as Roe v. Wade is to feminists. Indeed, as Mickey Kaus has observed, devotion to Davis-Bacon is more intense today than it was 30 years ago, when self-described neoliberals considered it a hallmark of outdated interest group liberalism. To be fair, not all progressives supported the welfare state on eugenic grounds. Some were deeply skeptical of the welfare state, but also on eugenic grounds. The Yale economist Henry Farnan co-founded with Commons the American Association for Labor Legislation, the landmark progressive organization whose work laid the foundation for most social insurance and labor laws today. They argued that public assistance was dysgenic, that is, it increased the ranks of the unfit because it afforded the degenerate classes an opportunity to reproduce, whereas in a natural environment such rabble would die off. But Farnham, the protectionist economist Simon Patton, and others didn't therefore oppose the welfare state on those grounds. That would be tantamount to social Darwinism. Rather, they argued that the unintended consequences of the welfare state required a draconian eugenic scheme to weed out the defective germplasm bred by the state's largesse. Why should Aryans be denied the benefits of state socialism when you could simply sweep up the unavoidable mess with a eugenic broom? Perhaps the only unifying political view held by virtually all eugenicists was that capitalism was dysgenic. Racial hygiene was a subset of the larger social question, and the one thing everyone knew was that laissez-faire was not the answer to the social question. Until the Nazis came along, Germany generally lagged behind the United States and much of Europe when it came to eugenics. When Indiana passed the first sterilization law in 1907 for confirmed criminals, idiots, imbeciles, and rapists, the West took notice.